Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast, after Christmas special, with your host, me,
Joe,
and Jen.
And we're here. Here we are.
Once again.
In that weird week between Christmas and New Year's, yeah. And nobody knows what day it is, or yeah. What's going on, and there's nothing going on.
I got up at 9 o'clock this morning.
The world is shut down.
Yeah.
Clink, clink. Shut down.
Rona's in charge.
The Rona. Round as a how. What's shaking, bacon? What's going on? What's new?
I just saw an article today and about pyramids discovered under the waters off the coast of Cuba.
Really?
Might be Atlantis.
Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum. The search is over.
There's remains of a 6,000-year-old city immersed under the waters of the west coast of Cuba. And there's three pyramid structures plus tons of walls and like fortresses, but three giant pyramids, one real small thin pyramid, and structures all over that they just found.
Three pyramids in Giza, three pyramids there, three pyramids in Antarctica.
Yeah, they're a step pyramid style, just like in
Mayan culture,
yeah.
Ooh, spooky.
But this could be true because, you know, I mean, I've been studying a lot about Graham Hancock and his theories of the asteroid impact 12,000 years ago, which flooded, you know, every religion has their flood stories. But they all kind of correspond with the same years. And also when the city of Atlantis supposedly was underwater. Was around the exact same time.
Interesting.
I think it was Plato, was it?
You better get your book written.
Yeah.
Before Nick Redfern writes
He
his.
Already has.
No, write it today, Joe.
But this could be very possible because the water levels were so much higher or so much lower back then.
Yeah.
Because it was all the water was trapped up in the glacier ice. And when this meteor hit the glacier, it melted all that ice, and now the sea levels are a lot higher.
So smart.
I know.
Where did the woolly mammoths go?
I think that they all were killed out at the same time because of the major floods and everything.
Interesting.
There was a field that he saw full of
woolly mammoths.
And they're all the skeletons they found were all laying the same way as if they were walking through and this flood just knocked them over. And
that is so interesting. Yeah. You know, we had one very close to where we live. There was one found in Dexter, I think it was.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
They found almost a complete skeleton. But man, have you ever been to a museum and seen like the skeletons of the mammoths and the tusks?
Yeah.
Giant.
The giant sloths.
Oh, yeah. Remember, we had one at the Toledo Zoo?
A sloth?
A giant sloth replica.
Replica. Yeah. I was going to say, we didn't have a giant, at least not that I know of.
It's in your backyard right now.
Yeah.
No, but
you could run from them easily because they move real slow.
Yeah, sure. And then you get eaten by a pterodactyl dorn or whatever it's called. Thunderbird.
So, what did you think of last week's show?
Oh, that was amazing. I think Ray had a very interesting tale to tell. I hope you guys, you know, tuned in and listened to his near-death experience. Or actually, I can't call it near-death because he actually died, but he came back to life, right? So, there's got to be a weird name for that. Like,
that's near-death. That's the same thing.
Return from the great unknown.
And did everybody catch up on the cringe factor at the beginning? I mentioned my best friend Dana, and he thought I mentioned his girlfriend who was murdered.
Sorry about that, Ray. But, really, really sad situation. And, you know, it being close to the anniversary, that was, I'm sure, not easy for him.
No.
Anyways, you know, Joe and I are thinking deeply about 2021 and places that we want to visit. And, you know, we don't even know what's going to happen. We don't know if conventions are going to go on or paranormal lockdowns or whatever you want to call it. Just not sure what's going to happen. So, you know, it's everything's so up in the air because, you know, normally by this time we're planning our whole year, yeah, where we're going, where we're traveling to, where we're going to investigate and where we're going to conference at. We haven't done anything. But, you know, one of the places that Joe and I really, 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 really want to get to is St. Louis, because there is so much haunting happenings in this city. We thought we'd tell you a little bit about a couple of the really interesting haunted places in St. Louis. One being the suicide caves that are beneath St. Louis, and yeah, then on to the Lemp Mansion, which if you guys have watched any of the paranormal shows or read online about this really, really interesting case of this, the Lemp Mansion, it's pretty spooky.
Has Zach been there?
Probably. I mean, he's been, where hasn't he been, right? I don't know. I can't think of any famous places that they haven't really been to.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't watch the show enough to know all the places they've been.
But okay, if anybody out there has a list, just send it to us. Kidding, I'm kidding. I don't really need to know that in my life.
I don't care.
Unless it comes from Zach and Nick and Aaron. Oh, wait, Nick's on the show anymore. Forgot. Whatever.
What? He's going to be up at Michigan Paracon.
Yeah, yeah. So as of right now, that's a go.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be up there. I think everybody in the paranormal, except for, you know, Ghost Adventures, is going to be there. It's going
to
be crazy.
It's a place
time.
To go.
The place to be. Sault Ste. Marie. Go to the Palace Saloon, get your firecrackers. Best food in the world. Best thing I ever ate. Might get some this week.
Yeah, you're going up there.
I am going up to St. Ignace.
I'm staying home.
Joe's staying home. Going to take care of Mama and my birds. Going to bird sit
for
me.
My sister's cat.
Oh, yes. He's cat sitting, bird sitting, and Mom sitting. He's a very busy boy. Yeah, so I'm excited. You know, just a little three-day getaway for New Year's.
I want to get up there and do an interview with one of the Indian elders and talk about the Indians up there.
Yeah, like the whole Native culture up there just seems so, you know, so prevalent. Mm-hmm. But you know, how do you find anybody who's willing to talk? Because there, you know, there may be things that they don't want to talk about that happen.
Yeah,
you know, like there may be skinwalkers going on. I thought the most interesting thing about skinwalkers last night, you know, in one of those new shows, you know, that was out, but they really went in a little bit more, you know, like they always talk about the ranch, Skinwalker mm-hmm. Ranch, but they talked a lot about the actual skinwalkers themselves.
Okay.
And that there is a branch of the tribal nations and or possibly government, I don't know, it was a little ambiguous, that are responding to cases where Native Americans are having a problem with skinwalkers.
Oh, okay.
And they think that Skinwalker Ranch is where they're housing some of these. But how do you house something that's...
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, if it's interdimensional or it's paranormal or it's, you know, a spiritual being or whatever, you can't, like, put it in a box or anything,
no.
You know? You can't put it in, like, a metal cage. It's...
Maybe that's just the main portal.
It could be. That's what they think.
Yeah.
They think. But, you know, they were saying that there was one that shape-shifted, was a dire wolf, and then they pumped it full of bullets, and it wouldn't die, and then it died, and then it came, turned into a man, body of a man. So, like, okay, is that murder then?
Yeah.
You know? Like.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. It was interesting, though. But
see, I always thought that the skinwalkers, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but I thought the whole idea behind a skinwalker was where the shaman or whatever just sees out of the eyes of whatever animal he goes into. I don't know. I'm going to have to dig into that more. I don't really know enough about that. To,
I know. We've done two shows on it, but we don't know anything about it.
Well, yeah, I know. But what I mean is I don't really know enough that I could talk without having the info in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I love to travel. And Joe and, you know, I have been, I, we've been pretty much around the Midwest and kind of branched out a little bit. But one place we haven't been is to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So, St. Louis has always been known as the beer town, a beer town, right? Like, so in 1854, it was known as the year the beer ran out because the city's residents simply drank it all. They drank all the beer. But in the days before, you know, Anheuser-Busch, there was another brewery that had started there, now decaying in the shadows of the 140-acre Busch complex. It was synonymous with St. Louis lager. It was called Limp.
Okay.
So their name, affixed top on the highest tower, still looms over the windowless grain silos and casts a pile over the red brick warehouses that is all around. Tell us a little bit about that, Joey.
It's a cool place. I didn't know about it until a little while ago when I was doing my research on it. And I looked it up, and if we were to just go to the brewery, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Because the way it is, and there has been death in the brewery, as we know. But the building itself is just unbelievable. It's all red brick. Mm-hmm. The silos are huge, all red brick. And nowadays you see the silos and they're just concrete. But these, they actually were made of brick, which is, I just blows my mind to see that. But, you know, there's haunted or history of hauntings in the actual brewery itself. And then a block and a half away, you have the Lemp Mansion, which is 300 or 400 times more haunted, you know. But let me give you a little bit of history about the house, because that's mainly what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay.
The house was built in 1890, according to the St. Louis tax records. In 1911, the house underwent major renovation, including conversions of some spaces into offices for the Lemp Brewery. The Lemps lived in the house until 1949, when Charles Lemp committed suicide.
Oh my gosh.
And that he committed suicide in his bed. In 1950, the house became a boarding house. And then through the next decade, it lost much of its ornate charm. The construction of, and because of the construction of the interstate in 1955. In the 1960s, led to the demolition of most of the grounds and one of the carriage houses.
Oh, no.
So it's basically just what's left of it is the main house, mm-hmm. which there's being used today as a wedding hall, reception hall, restaurant, stuff like that. And it still has rooms in it that you can actually rent and stay at.
Oh, neat. Spooky.
Yeah. You know, although many of the original details of the house have been replaced, it still remains one of the most decorative places in St. Louis. And they tried to keep the original charm where they could. Some of it is reconstruction, but most of it's the original stuff.
That's interesting. I love old mansions like that. I think it's just so interesting to see how people lived
mm-hmm.
without the modern conveniences of the world. I mean,
that's what's cool about lots of places we go into is we get to see that. And a lot of people say, well, how could they live without this? Well, that's what they were used to.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
There's 9 spirits that reside in the house, in the mansion part of it. And 5 of them are family members,
okay.
including the family dog, Serva, which I believe is some of the main shadow figures that people see.
Ooh.
The dog was, in life, the dog was very friendly. It loved all the parties. You know, it instead of being like mean or that, it would always try to lick people to death, you know? So
I got licked it up.
Yeah. So it's said that one of the big things that happens in the house and in a lot of people's photos are shadow figures. And a lot of the shadow figures are pretty much in this, I mean, not exact, but in the shape of a dog to where it would be a good sized dog in the house. But that's one big thing is in this house or in the mansion, people get touched. People get to see shadow figures, EVPs like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
But the main thing is a lot of the people's photographs have shadows in them that are clearly defined, not just, you know, like you see on Facebook with the red circle around them.
And you're like, I don't see anything. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So in 1901, there was a devastating loss in the Lamp Mansion. It's actually in Benton Park, Missouri. So that's probably like a suburb of St. Okay. Louis, you know. And it shook the family to the core and spelled disaster for the family fortune. Little did the Lumps know this death was the first in what was going to be a long line of suicides in gruesome misfortunes. So once one of the most powerful and wealthy families in the St. Louis area, the Lumps' fate quickly took a turn for the worst after building and moving into their new luxurious home. So who exactly was this family? What happened to their ghosts to make them stick around? And it all started in 1863 when Johann Adam Lemp immigrated to the United States, leaving behind his native Germany. After settling in the United States, he began a grocery store called A. Lemp & Co. He brought groceries, he got them from other suppliers. He would also known, besides, you know, later making beer, was he sold his own vinegar. So he would make beer and vinegar. And by 1840, he was solely focused on manufacturing and selling beer. Once his focus shifted from the store, Lemp formed Western Brewery. It was quickly became popular with the increasing amount of German immigrants into the community. So Adam Lemp was one of the first to in the U.S. to brew a German lager rather than English-style ales. So the new style kind of caused a sensation, like everybody loves a new beer, right? So soon enough, he was growing an empire. And he created a Falstaff beer brand, which he thought would go down in history, but it didn't for reasons that he did not anticipate. So in 1862, the year of Adam's death, the Lemp's Western Brewery was among the most successful in Missouri. After he had passed away, his son William took over the brewery. So William Lemp expanded the brewery in 1864, and he and his wife Julia built their family mansion in 1868, a year after the birth of their first child. So built early in the 1860s, the mansion was purchased by William Lemp to function both as a residence and a place where his brewery could thrive. So the new Lemp Mansion had 33 rooms. Oh my God, can you imagine? Like five maids. A Victorian look and a sizable basement with three floors, not including the attic room. As owner and operator, William Lemp pushed the Western Brewery and became the largest brewery in St. Louis, and it later became the largest outside of New York with a single owner. William demonstrated innovation and a strong business sense, and he began to brew and bottle beer in the same facility, which was kind of, you know, a revolutionary at that time. He installed the first refrigerated machine in an American brewery and added refrigerated rail cars to allow the transport of Western Brewery beer across the United States. So the beer became a national product that would soon reach worldwide distribution. William and Julia had six children. The fourth and William Sr.'s favorite, Frederick, was being groomed to replace his father at the head of the business. Unbeknownst to the family, Frederick had a significant health problem that would lead to his death in 1901 of heart failure. So the family took the death of the 28-year-old very hard, especially Frederick's father. William mourned deeply for 3 years. He was devastated. He just barely could go on. And his close friend, Frederick Pabst of PBR fame,
yeah,
which we'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute, had passed away in 1904. So only 3 years later, his best friend dies. So William was already very despondent and slowly declining. So after about a month of Pabst's death, William Lemp committed suicide with a shotgun. Thanks to the strengthening temperance movement, the beer was significantly less popular by the time of William's death. The eldest son, William Jr., or they called him Billy, took over the Western Brewery but struggled to return it to its former glory. In fact, Billy was so much better at partying than running a business. So he was a party boy, right? And rumored that he had taken part in many discreet gatherings that involved illicit alcohol and prostitution. And the misdeeds became grounds for his wife to divorce him in 1908, citing mistreatment and indecency. But only after 11 days, the divorce was successfully filed. Billy's wife received a large sum of money from the Lemp family and gained full custody of their only son. So it's interesting because, you know, you have a declining business, you mm-hmm. have deaths in the family, you have a suicide already. It's interesting because this is why they call it the suicide cave.
Okay.
So the new brewery complex was situated on top of natural caves that were perfect for storing ice and aging the beer. So the whole complex is on these caves. Now, don't all caves like remain at like the same temperature?
Yeah.
Certain temperature?
Well, unless they get deeper, you know, but a regular cave mm-hmm. is usually about 52 degrees or something like that.
Okay. So,
and don't go into caves unless you have a face mask on.
Yeah, don't get cave cough like Joe did in a haunted cave. So, you know, at that time, William had taken full advantage of the underground space and made tunnels that connected the house to the brewery. So they didn't even have to go outside, right?
Yeah.
Like if it was snowing or raining, they just go into the tunnels underneath. So when the son died of heart failure at 28, William, he just snapped, right? Like he couldn't handle it. His best friend died 3 years later. What's interesting is he had, William, now this is the original father, had the largest mausoleum in the Bellefontaine Cemetery built for him.
Oh.
As if he knew his family would need such a large monument sooner than, you know, later. From then on, William seemed to sink into the caves under the house. So he eventually avoided the outside world entirely and walked to work back and forth through the dark tunnels. So in 1904, a month after his best friend and fellow brewer Frederick Pabst died, he excused himself from the breakfast table at the Lemp Mansion, returned to his bedroom, and he shot himself in the head. Yeah.
I just looked up online the Lemp Mausoleum.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, it's big.
Giant.
It's huge. It's like a mansion itself.
Oh, my gosh. Can you
It imagine? Looks like there is space for 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 12, 24, probably 24 to maybe more people.
Wow.
Yeah.
And those things are, I mean, you look at a little grave plaque like we're trying to get my dad and it's like $8,000. That's probably huge amount of money.
Yeah, back then when it was built, though, it was a lot less, but still for the time.
Yeah. He commits suicide, right? Tragic death, stone tape theory, right? Imprinted into the house.
Oh, yeah.
So his oldest son, which William Jr., they call them Billy, so we'll call him Billy here, he immediately took over the brewery, and he had a vivacious society wife. Now, her name was Lillian, but everybody called her the Lavender Lady.
Okay.
And she was a spoiled St. Louis debutante who had a lavender horse-drawn carriage for every day of the week and an endless supply of custom-made lavender dresses to match her carriages. Right? Love it. I'm a lavender girl myself. So unlike his father, Billy never cared about the business of brewing beer as much as he cared about the lifestyle it afforded him. Eventually, when the refrigerator, you know, automatic, you know, mm-hmm. electricity refrigerators come in, replaced the what they used the caves for. So he turned the caves into an underground swimming pool and a private theater.
Cool.
Interesting. and he held these like underground parties that turned into these just like booze fueled debaucheries. And it was just, you know, hedonism, yeah. I guess you would say. And then the purple lady or lavender lady, Lillian, divorced him in a very nasty public trial because of it. So, you know, his proclivities for prostitutes and pistols were trouted all through the divorce court. So like all the secrets came out. she spilled all the beans, right? And the one of the youngest of the Lemps, so they had 8 children in total. So there was Anna, Billy, Lewis, Charles, Frederick, Hilda, Edwin, and Elsa. So they had, looks like 3 girls and 5 boys. Yeah. She also had a very rocky marriage. So she's the youngest. She, you know, although it didn't make it into the papers, her neighbors were still well aware that her husband had problems. They would scream and fight and crash, and neighbors would hear all of these noises coming from their house. And she was found, now this is the youngest, Elsa, shot in her bed one morning in 1920. And it was her husband who was quick to call it a suicide, just like her father. Okay. So he is just, you know, none of her friends believed it. She was never melancholy. And when Billy heard the news, he said, well, that's the Lemp family for you.
Well, I do know that Charles, he ended up, like you said, living a reclusive existence until he too died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. His body was discovered by his brother Edwin. And in 1970, Edwin died of natural causes at the age of 90.
4 family members, maybe 5 that died in there?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers that died in the mansion itself, but the Lemp family has a long history of death other than just natural causes, you know? Mm-hmm. I was going to say they had a history of death, but everybody does.
Yeah. We're all not getting out of here, right? So this is what's interesting. So of all of the Lemp children, Edwin lived the longest.
Yeah.
So he and Billy were the ones who discovered the father's body, like you said, rushed to their sister's house when she killed herself. He had shown up to make arrangements when Billy shot himself in overseeing Charles Strange's request to be cremated and buried in secret.
Oh, not at the mausoleum?
I don't know. So, you know, it had taken a toll on him, and in his old age, he grew terrified of being alone. So he just didn't want to be alone, yeah. Right? So he hired a caretaker to stay with him at all times. And when he died in 1970, his final wish was for his caretaker to burn every piece of art in the house and all the Lemp family papers and heirlooms. And the caretaker obliged, and much of the Lemp family history was lost forever in the fire. That's weird. Like, who cares? Like, you're dead. Who cares? Like, today, in the modern time, they are using the Lemp mansion in, or the basement of the brewery, I should say.
Okay.
They transform it into, like, a Halloween. Okay. You know, like, yeah, maze. Haunted maze. And they do everything but, you know, almost tout like the real ghost in there and a taste of the Lemp madness. Beyond the basement where they have this haunted attraction, the caves go so deep that eyeless cavefish swim in the pool. And then if you take a match and light it, it'll sputter out as soon as it's struck.
So because there's not much oxygen.
Right. Because it is a bed and breakfast, you can go and stay in there.
I'm thinking more and more that we should. When you're talking about this, in my mind, I'm going, I need to get a hold of somebody to find out if we can go exploring.
I know. How interesting would that be? It wouldn't surprise me. And I know there's been, you know, a lot of people have investigated there that the spirit of Charles and the other Lemp family members are in that house.
I believe they are.
And they're not happy. I mean, they probably weren't that happy in life.
Doesn't seem like it.
Why would they be that happy in death, right? Yeah. It's like they're imprinted there and they don't want to leave, which I understand. That was their house.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they go anywhere else? I wouldn't be surprised if you had activity in the caves underneath.
Oh, yeah.
Since he walked that path every single day and didn't even go outside, I'm sure there's some kind of residual energy going on there.
Plus, they didn't make the caves. The caves were there before the house and the brewery were actually built. And I know that St. Louis has a rich history of Native American history, so they used the caves also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there could be a lot of energy that maybe caused some of their distress.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
I mean, you have a successful business. You have a big family, which...
They didn't seem like they were too happy with each other.
I know, I don't get that. I guess, you know, you never know. You just don't know. I mean, with all the history and papers that were lost, mm-hmm. there could have been suicide notes that,
yeah.
you know, explained some of the reasoning why. I guess, you know, if you could get in there and investigate, people are probably asking those questions. Why did you commit suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Why were you unhappy?
Yeah.
Why are you still here?
And you can go online and look at a lot of the YouTube videos of the different teams that have been there and the EVPs they caught, and just they're just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's very and active.
You can actually hear a lot of them in the recording, you know, audible EVPs. But one of the spirits that people talk about the most is a little boy named Zeke. Now, I tried to find a little more history on him, but I couldn't really find much in the amount of time that I had today to search for this.
I just sprung this topic on them like an hour before we taped.
But Zeke is known to be on the third floor, which is like the attic area. Mm-hmm. And he's known to look out the windows a lot. Okay. And he's known to be seen in the windows from the outside of the house. And also when little kids come around, he has a tendency to get really excited.
Aww.
To where they can actually see him or hear him pounding on the windows.
Oh my gosh.
Trying to get the kids' attention.
Wow.
So this is a very active spirit. The woman that runs the ghost tours and all that, her name is Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually had a lot of contact with Zeke. She actually brought a teddy bear in, and she claims that she saw the teddy bear floating as if a little boy had it in his arms and was playing with it.
Oh my gosh, I would freak out.
But a lot of the activity is, he's very active. But another thing is, though, he's very scared. She said that he has the mental capacity of a child, as in an infant or maybe a one-year-old, which I don't understand if he was challenged or whatever.
Maybe, yeah.
You know? But he's said to be very scared. You have to be real careful that when you want to talk to him. He hides upstairs on the third floor. There's a set of double doors that he's seen around a lot. Like I said, he's seen in the windows and that. But he's a spirit that you want to try to get it in contact with, but you have to treat him as a child.
Okay.
You don't go in. You don't slide your REM pod in and start screaming, light up the lights, you know. Just treat him as if he's there in front of you, because he is.
Auntie Jen will come visit.
Yeah.
Like
I mean, I have the tendency to sit on the floor and...
Well, you want to get down as to if the level.
As if they're there.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people just don't... I don't know. I just see some ghost hunters talking to spirits as if they're all adults.
Mm-hmm.
Not all spirits are adults, kids.
No, and that's what you want to do is, and we've mentioned it so many times, people are like, yes, we know. But that's the way you do it.
For our first-time listeners.
Our first-time listeners, we talk about this all the time.
But I wanted to mention something, and this is a really, like, 6 degrees to Joe and Jen, 222 Paranormal Podcast. So, William Lemp's best friend, Pabst, of the Pabst PBR Brewing family, is actually... in a roundabout way, a relative.
Yeah.
So our lineage on my mom's side, their last name was Best. And we did, or my uncles at one time did the family tree, and they traced it all the way back to Germany in like the 1500s or something like that. They even went over to Germany and did some research. But Mary Pabst married Jacob Best. And they had, at one time, a beer called Jacob Best Beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a roundabout way, we're related to the PBR family.
Yeah.
Who were best friends with the Limp. So, just a strange rabbit hole of information. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, we're doing the story about this. And they mentioned Pabst. And our relative married their relative.
Yeah.
So, it's all relative, right? Okay, Joe, let's have some beers. No, I'm kidding. Joe doesn't drink.
But not anymore.
Not anymore.
But yeah, if you guys go out there and
take us with you.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely.
Yeah, we're getting
the more I know about this, the more I really want to go see it because.
Joe loves caves.
I love caves and I love cemeteries.
Yeah.
And the Bellefontaine Cemetery is where the Lemps Mausoleum is. And
people have tried to investigate there.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Bellefontaine Cemetery on the web, mm-hmm. on the internets.
I'll have to look it up.
Oh my God, this place, we've got to go there. The mausoleums in this place are unbelievable. They're mansions in themselves.
Joe and I love cemeteries. Do you guys love cemeteries as much as we do? It's so fascinating.
And it's not that far from their actual brewery and everything. It's right in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we got to go. So if you guys go, man, make sure you go to the Bellefontaine Cemetery and check out their mausoleum.
Yeah, I really love to see that. I think it would be fascinating. You know, like the Bush family are buried there, the Wainwrights, a lot of prominent people from the St. Louis area and in the brewing, you know, families. There's only, you know, it's over 300 acres of property in the Bellefontaine.
It's amazing.
Cemetery, yeah. Interesting.
It's at 4947 West Florescent Street. Or Florescent. I got the map up here. That's why.
Way to go, Joe.
Hey, you got to have the computer in front of you if you want to find out this information,
right? I know, right? There's 87,000 burials and 5,000 trees in the cemetery. Jeez. That's crazy.
Yeah. So anyways, get over there. Get a chance to go there. And if there's anyone listening that lives there and wants to show us around, let me know. I'm not
be our tour guide.
Yeah, the more I'm looking at this, more I'm going to go. I'm going to pack my bags tonight because I have a few days off. I should be there right now.
You go, Joe.
But you're it's cold.
I know.
Yeah. I don't want to go out the cold. So anyhow, thanks for listening this week, folks.
Tune in next week.
Hope you really enjoyed the show. Very interesting. I didn't know much about this. And then this morning when you said, hey, let's do this mansion, I'm like, okay, because Jen's heading out of town. Her bags are packed. The gas is filled with gas.
I have gas. I mean, no.
Jen's got gas in the car.
Woo!
And she's heading out.
Yep, a couple of days.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll see some ghosts in St. Ignace. All right, everybody, thanks for listening to our Babble Fest. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week. Happy New Year. And let's make 2021 as ghosty as possible.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
All right, let's leave with some crud.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. And you bark, and now you lost your reason.